Solve, secure, protect. Look to Patel for the independent thinking and cross-disciplinary focus it takes to advance security and safety in a changing world. They provide their clients with integrated solutions that secure our nation and help solve challenges within infrastructure, environment, emerging threats, and deployable mission-ready technology. Their teams leverage their deep expertise to develop science and technology for a healthier, safer, and more sustainable world. Visit Battelle.org to learn how Battelle makes the impossible possible. Welcome to From the Crow's Nest and our show daily episode here as we wrap up the third and final day of AOC 2021. I am your host, Ken Miller, Director of Advocacy and Outreach for the Association of Old Crows, and I'm joined here by my special co-host, Tala Alshaboot. Welcome, Tala.
Hi, Ken.
And once again, we are here with Jesse Judge Bork to join us as we kind of go over some of the highlights and of today's agenda. Welcome, Judge, to back on to From the Crow's Nest.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, well, we just wrapped up our third and final day here at AOC 2021, and this morning got off to a great start with a keynote presentation with Lieutenant General Clinton Hynote, the Deputy Chief of Staff for Strategy, Integration, and Requirements with the U.S. Air Force. I had the pleasure of sitting down with General Hynote shortly after his presentation, but I wanted to get your take on some of his remarks this morning.
Thank you very much, Ken and Tala. His comments this morning were amazingly, it's 2 days in a row, for the last 3 days has been brilliant, but these 2 days in a row of the keynote speakers hitting on exactly the key pieces, the strategic narratives and the key messages that I think that we need to hear, the community of practice needs to hear and need to understand is coming from the highest levels of the department. General Hynote was extremely, I thought he was a very gracious and energetic speaker. And as the Air Force's chief futurist, really lived up to that role. One of the things that he said that really stuck with me about midway through in his wonderfully extemporaneous remarks were that every warrior in this world has to be a spectrum warrior. I think that is a key thing to for us to understand. And that helps to signal that at least the Air Force and others in the senior executive pay grades, especially in uniform, are starting to understand that we need to make the shift from a joint fighting force that operates with pieces of spectrum to a joint fighting force that is within the spectrum. As I said my comments yesterday, it's not unlike the manner in which a submarine negotiates the ocean, is within the ocean, right? Our radios, radars, jamming systems, C2, space, and even some, our cyber apertures are within the EMS. And so I heard it best a few years back when a Navy Lieutenant Commander, when he was fielding a question, he stood up and said, well, you know, we're all in two domains, the one that matches our uniform and the electromagnetic spectrum. So I think General Hynote's comments really, really underscore that. And he actually provides a great legacy.
And the notion of legacy is very important, because it's one thing when we talk about advocacy in the electromagnetic spectrum, it's one thing to adopt that advocacy, but General Hynote actually has fought in the spectrum his throughout his career. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because you're very familiar with his legacy that he's brought to the Air Force.
Yeah. I was an admirer of the man already for his position, the things he's done, the responsibilities he have. You know, only just the portion of those responsibilities they can speak about are fascinating. But of course, he's compromised in his position that a lot of the special things that are going on are things that he can't talk about. But one thing that came to light again today was that he was a weasel pilot. Right, and F4G weasel pilot, right? So that's kind of a big deal. That's one of our key legacies, and one of the last vestiges of kind of traditional, you know, full press, completely, you know, electromagnetic attack coming out of the Vietnam era and through the Desert Storm.
And so he knows from personal experience where we've been and where we've come since then, and then some of the gaps that have been we've talked about for decades here.
Absolutely. He's in an interesting position. It's a trifecta, I want to say right now. He's in an interesting position because he is at senior executive pay grades, so he's got an outsized influence. He's got skin in the game because he was a weasel pilot and was in conflict, right? And then he's a member of this He's a member of this larger family that's just trying to get warfighting done. And I think that provides an individual, you know, excellent for the Air Force and excellent for the Joint Force to the extent that his innovative wishes can populate and inform the future force. On innovation, let me mention one or two things that he brought up, right? So he's not just attacking the, and this is fascinating to me, so he's not just attacking the fact that we generically need innovation. He's questioning the state of innovation, right? The entire sphere of innovation. How can we decompose this, understand it, and then put it back together in such a way that the technology we want is not impeded or obstructed by the cultures that we face every day? How do we take apart? How do we decompose those cultural obstacles and predispose or induce the Air Force and then by extension the Department of Defense to innovate against its old legacy interest?
And that was actually one of the things we talked about in the podcast, because I've heard this through with some of the other interviews we've had, the importance of it was brought to us, you know, like the importance of embedding warfighters with the technologists and the innovators. But it also works the other way, where if we could embed the technologists with the warfighters and let them see how we fight on the edge.
Yeah.
And that picture can actually open up all the possibilities that we want.
Absolutely.
What we need to do.
Absolutely. This is a he referred to this as he pointed to the left and right sides of his brain. You know, he say that we as humans prefer, you know, we're right-handed or left-handed, we prefer one side. As cultures, if they're fluid like the commercial market, or if they're hierarchical and less fluid perhaps like the military ethos, right, we prefer one side or the other. He said we need to be ambidextrous, right? We need to bring military and commercial innovation together to experience each other, and not only to constantly and relentlessly populate the system engineering and development cycle with operational expertise, but also make sure that the department is walking in lockstep with commercial entities who provide some of these magic toys that we use.
Thank you for that, Judge. Our final two sessions focused on 5G networks and building the future all-domain force. How do these uniquely relate to EMSO, and are we on the right path? What are some obstacles and opportunities in front of us moving into 2022?
Well, one of the things that I love and I that challenge us, I think, about the AOC annual symposia are that there is so much rich content and so many different complementary but distinct discussions that sometimes they're placed, you know, right next to each other, right? So I'm only one person, I can only be in one place at once, and my attention span is like a goldfish, right? So if I get up from one session and walk into another, sample 5 minutes, come back like a wine tasting, I'll pick up exactly nothing. So what I did was I made the hard choice, as much as I know that 5G is an amazingly important topic, and working in DoD CIO as I do, as contract support, I have some views on that. I was in the I was actually in the Building Future EMSO session, so I got to hear Dr. Conley in that panel. Right. What I will say about 5G is that very quickly, just as a generic comment, is that it provides great, outstanding commercial opportunities for providing more benefit with the new technology, perhaps at the same cost and the same infrastructure cost. As a military application, I would say only that we need to probably go a bit cautiously, because one of my theses has been that systems that are designed for compliance environments, for commercial environments, for civil environments that only have to tolerate routine congestion, are not always the best systems in toto to be included or to be incorporated in the chaotic, dynamic, escalatory, de-escalatory, pseudo-random environments of combat that don't have that basic that underlying compliance characteristic. So I think we certainly will, because of the beam shaping bandwidth, high bandwidth technologies that 5G and subsequently 6G provide us, I think we need to be distinct and specific and discriminatory with respect to what portions of the technologies that we repurpose into military capabilities to make sure that we pick the meat out of the soup. We get all the good illities out of it, and we don't inadvertently ingest the bad illities, right? Because I've always said if you hand a soldier an iPhone, then you give them great capability, low price point, great flexibility, apps, and all that kind of good stuff, and you just solve the targeting problem down to 30 megahertz, right? So you don't want to cause a problem by trying to avoid another. That being said, 5G is a brilliant technology, and again, I support the DoD CIO fully on trying to mature it for exercise use and for training use in at home station. On the Building Future EMSO session, there was a great deal of technical discussion. Not being an engineer myself, they were able to express fairly complicated concepts and ideas and approaches in such a way that they were still available to everyone. So they didn't hurt us with any math. Thank God there's not a whiteboard in that room. That would have been disastrous, right? But there was an outstanding, highly technical discussion. One of the things that they brought up at the outset was Moore's Law always comes up. It's a staple. It's like rice. I mean, it's always going to come up. And that is, of course, the doubling in capacity of transistors every aboard a transistor every 18 months. But the group, the panel, the expert panel that was up on stage mentioned a corollary to that, which is supported by GTRI from data that goes all the way back to 1990, that power, computing power, also doubles in 18 months. Right? And that is a multiplicative effect, at least a geometric effect on the Moore's Law number of transistors that you can, number of circuits you can get aboard transistors you can get aboard a chip, right? And then Bill Conley, a good friend of mine, offered that AI machine learning abilities double every 3.5 months. So think about that. You could buy an advanced piece of equipment, put it into service, exercise your force, get them ready for the fight, and then by the time they go to the fight, you've already decremented the net capability of your force based upon what a peer adversary could buy in field with a shorter lead length of acquisition. So that's something that we need to consider. These things aren't out there just irritating us. They are collaboratively irritating us in a nonlinear fashion, and I think we need to keep that
trend. And that's going to continue to exponentially increase. I mean, as we look forward, were they able to offer any solutions? How do we have to think differently about that than to address it? Because otherwise, one of my interviews, we end up shooting behind the duck all the time.
Right.
And how do we change that moving forward?
Yes. What I've always said since I was a young child is you can't skate to the puck if you're shooting behind the duck. I actually never said that. That's just something I'm making up right now. So
that sounded good.
I'll write it down.
It'll go down in lore on From the Crow's Nest. So thanks for that.
It'll go down somewhere for sure. In any event, so to answer your question, this is a really complex problem. And Bill, Dr. Conley said a while back, kind of jokingly, but he meant it, some of life is so sad that it's funny, that it took us 25 years to get into our current situation. We're not going to get out in the weekend. It's complicated and it's complex. And so what the group offered was to discuss a generous range of kind of fundamental building blocks of EMSO systems. They went deeply into FPGAs, the advance of broadband capabilities, dynamic polarization, GaN, gallium nitride circuitry to replace the old gallium arsenide circuitry, right? The blurring line between hardware and software. When things are software definable, right, what parts of the actual hardware become software definable? So that line is blurring, and that's actually something that we can use. That's a dynamic that we can leverage, right? And then the stressing needs for data storage and featuring, to provide it to people, hyperscale computing in the cloud. All of these things are tools that we can apply innovative mindsets to and a collaborative approach to not remediate, because you're not going to make those dynamics that we just mentioned go away, but the rising tide that floats all boats, all peer forces are faced with some version of the same problems. So, you don't have to be faster than the bear. You just have to be faster than the slowest person running away from the bear, right? to say it, right? So then they moved kind of toward the end to how to compose all of those building blocks into composite force capabilities. And that was a key way of kind of moving the conversation forward.
All right. So our closing session today was, Our closing session today was Mr. Terry Mitchell. He's the principal cyber advisor and the Secretary of the Army. And so, you know, we talked a lot about the Air Force today, and right. We opened up with General High Note. You know, what are some of your thoughts on how the Army is handling some of these issues moving forward?
Certainly. Well, I'm a retired Air Force officer, but I was graced with the opportunity to deploy with Army a great number of times. Growing up in Air Force Special Operations, we had the opportunity to work with elite forces and elite Army forces and joint forces, and then being in Iraq as a chief of electronic warfare during the 2006 timeframe under Lieutenant General Corelli, I was deployed with general purpose Army forces. And since that time, I have been watching a slow evolution, because the only change that's important is change at the speed of culture. Army is a deep and profound culture as far as cultures go. And the way that they have incorporated cyber is in a blended sort of way. So each of the services have a characteristic performance dynamic. I mean, you know, the Navy, has a deep blue characteristic, right? And that leads them to look at the EMS a certain way. The Air Force is, you know, moving between 250 and 650 knots to the sky in formations. That leads them to look at things a certain way. The Army is large, powerful, not stationary, but kind of concentrated in space. And that causes them, I think, endemically to see the opportunities and the challenges as a subset of everything that we need to look at with respect to the EMS, and then the connectivity that and the C3, that command, control, and communications that is provided by cyber. And then, of course, there's an offensive aspect that you can add to that. We could go into that all day. But their blended approach to it with SEMA allows them to optimize their capability development and their concept development in such a way that they take the pieces of the EMS, mostly in the RF, but not entirely, and then the pieces of cyberspace that they need to ensure connectivity to bring force to bear, that's actually fairly sophisticated and tailored to their individual needs. And they've been actually doing a very good job of it, in my opinion.
So what are your closing thoughts on AOC 2021? Not simply the symposium theme and topics, but the overall experience.
Well, man, I'm the wrong person to ask if you want a balanced answer to that. I love this. I love this. I look forward to this every year. I love it this year. It's tremendous. The staff did a brilliant job of generating the illusion that COVID didn't happen. And that's one of the most amazing. I've heard a long time ago that the best job you can possibly do is when you don't even look like you're doing your job. And this, we didn't miss a beat. I'm so proud as a board member of how this is going.
Our numbers are just as strong as they were in 2019. So it's nice to be able to basically close that chapter now,
right,
and say, okay, now here we are moving forward.
Right. And you know, the AOC always hates closing a chapter. Little joke there for everybody. So there's a confluence of things here, I think, that people need to take note of, right? So again, I work in DoD CIO, and we helped, and I was aboard the MSO CFT cross-function team, so we helped write the EMS superiority strategy, and you know, was there when they were putting together the implementation plan that's going across the United States Department of Defense for realizing the vision of freedom of action in the electromagnetic spectrum in the times and places of our choosing. So we have venues like this, right? This annual symposium is the pinnacle of this discussion, these people, and this community of practice. We're very well represented here. At the same time, that the narrative that we have been trying to champion and advocate for, coming up as young officers and, you know, recent retirees from the bottom up, now is being it's being adopted wholesale at the highest pay grades, and they're not talking about other issues. And oh, by the way, let me mention EMS. They are focusing their conversations on EMS superiority, the strategic need for it, and the fact that it is a physical precursor to success in the other physical domains, air, land, space, and sea. Right. So that's kind of a big deal. I love the show. It is a brilliant version of what it wants to be. It doesn't miss a step from the last time we had the opportunity to do this, notwithstanding the pandemic that happened in between. And it is perfectly aligned with the narrative of our most senior executives in the Department of Defense. So this is a great time. It's a great time to be a Crow. It's a great time to be an AOC member.
Great. Well, thank you, Judge, for joining us here on Show Daily here to close out AOC 2021. And thank you, Tala, for co-hosting this episode with me. And thank you for doing the Show Daily yesterday with us.
Yes, very
thank
special.
Thank you so much,
you.
Ken.
Yeah.
Well, that will conclude this episode of From the Crow's Nest and our Show Daily episode. To learn more about From the Crow's Nest podcast, please visit us on our website at crows.org/podcast. Thank you for listening. This podcast is brought to you by Battelle, the world's largest independent, not-for-profit, applied science and technology organization. Since 1929, their mission has been to translate scientific discovery and technology advances to benefit society. Through markets such as health, environment, infrastructure, industry, and national security, Battelle has been delivering cutting-edge solutions that impact the well-being of the world and help keep us safe at home. To learn more, go to battelle.org/connect. That's BATTELLE.org/connect.